What if the most criticized profession in modern society, the one blamed for crashes, inequality, and greed, actually holds profound truths about living well? Finance seems like the last place we'd look for life wisdom. Yet, beneath the spreadsheets and jargon lies something unexpected, a framework for navigating uncertainty, building relationships, and creating meaning. This isn't about getting rich or beating the market. It's about recognizing that the principles governing our financial decisions mirror the deepest questions we face. How do we manage an unpredictable future? What truly creates value? When should we commit, and when should we keep our options open? By reconnecting finance to literature, philosophy, and everyday experience, we discover that its core ideas aren't cold calculations. They're deeply human insights about risk, relationships, and what matters most. Life is fundamentally uncertain, yet probabilistic thinking emerged only in 1654 when Pascal and Fermat solved a gambling problem. Their breakthrough revealed the normal distribution, beautifully demonstrated by Galton's quincunx machine, where randomly falling balls create a perfect bell curve. While most statisticians saw deterministic laws of nature, philosopher Charles Sanders Peirce recognized that randomness and patterns coexist. This dual understanding birthed insurance and modern finance. Insurance originated with maritime contracts, protecting merchants from enslavement if goods were lost. Pricing insurance requires understanding probability. When Louis XVI's government offered uniform annuity rates regardless of age, the resulting fiscal crisis contributed to the French Revolution. Peirce concluded we should see ourselves as insurance companies. Since chance pours in at every avenue of sense, all human affairs rest on probabilities. By embracing randomness rather than denying it, we can thrive in uncertainty. Our individual experiences are limited by mortality, so we must extend our interests to the whole community. Experience gathering demands empathy. In Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth Bennet rejects Mr. Collins despite modest means, while Charlotte Lucas accepts him for security, a marriage market dilemma mirroring modern choices, like pursuing education versus accepting a job offer. Finance offers two decision-making tools, options and diversification. Options gain value through asymmetry, limited downside, unlimited upside. FedEx founder Fred Smith demonstrated this facing bankruptcy. With $5,000 against a $24,000 fuel bill, he gambled in Las Vegas, won $32,000 at blackjack, reasoning, "Without the funds for fuel, we couldn't have flown anyway." Yet people often hoard options without exercising them. Students intending brief consulting stints remain indefinitely, repeatedly asking, "Why not stay another year?" Diversification is finance's only free lunch. The most valuable portfolio additions behave differently from existing assets. This applies to relationships. Surrounding yourself with diverse perspectives creates resilience. High beta assets are connections present during success but absent during hardship. Low beta assets are steady friends who remain regardless. Most precious are negative beta assets, people offering unconditional love, like mothers who take delight in loving without expecting return. The word talent originally meant currency. The biblical parable reveals this truth. A master gives talents to three servants. Two double theirs through trading and receive praise. Well done, good and faithful servant. The third buries his in fear and merely returns it, earning rebuke and banishment. The lesson? Talents are distributed unequally, are immensely valuable, and must be fully exercised. Finance mirrors this. Capital has a cost based on investor expectations, and value emerges only by exceeding that cost. Meeting expectations breaks even. Falling short destroys value. Three life lessons emerge. Ruthlessly look forward, ignoring past accomplishments when deciding. Recognize that estimating value requires imagining alternative futures. Understand that enduring value comes from what we leave behind, not what we enjoy. Modern capitalism's principal agent problem occurs when investors delegate authority to managers who have their own agendas and superior information. This framework illuminates personal relationships too. Parents ostensibly help children realize their potential, yet inevitably imprint values that make children agents of parental agendas. We face similar dynamics with social expectations. Like Lucy Honeychurch in A Room with a View, we muddle between serving social expectations and being our own principles, what L. Luna calls the crossroads between should, how others want us to show up, and must, our authentic self. Childhood experiences become hidden principles we unwittingly serve. Psychoanalyst Stephen Gross suggests many adult problems reflect unresolved childhood experiences. We become unwitting agents of sublimated experiences until we consciously architect our own lives. The gifted child archetype describes sensitive children attuned to others' needs who struggle to formulate their own agendas as adults, trapped as agents who don't know how to become principals. Understanding this dynamic is the first step toward reclaiming agency. Leverage, borrowing money, allows us to move objects we have no business moving, like Archimedes' lever. Homeowners buy $500,000 homes with just $100,000 in equity, amplifying both gains and losses. This mirrors how we live. George Orwell represents the low-leverage approach, retreating to isolated Jura to write 1984, free from obligations. Artist Jeff Koons embraces extreme leverage, employing 125 staff and selling works in advance to finance ambitious installations. Most of us land somewhere between. Marriages, friendships, children, and organizations all represent leverage, commitments that limit autonomy but enable otherwise unattainable experiences. Studies suggest most regrets stem from avoided commitments rather than excessive ones. Yet leverage creates debt overhang, where existing obligations prevent pursuing new opportunities. Kazuo Ishiguro's Mr. Stevens in The Remains of the Day embodies this. His commitment to Lord Darlington prevents him from pursuing love with Miss Kenton, leaving him with nothing when Darlington's reputation collapses. The optimal leverage pattern follows a hump shape. Young firms and people avoid debt. Mature ones leverage up. Aging ones deleverage. Beyond trade-offs, leverage offers a bonus. The discipline of commitments forces better behavior. As Thomas Watson advised, make friends who will force you to lever yourself up. The commitments we make shape who we become. James Joyce called Tolstoy's How Much Land Does a Man Need the greatest story ever written. It follows Pacome, a peasant whose land hunger ends in death, needing only 6 feet of earth for his grave. From Theodore Dreiser's The Financier to Gordon Gekko, culture portrays finance as driven by greed, ignoring that the field is built on risk aversion and diminishing returns. Willa Cather's Alexandra Berkson in O Pioneers offers something different. She uses leverage wisely and assesses risk carefully, yet credits luck over skill. Despite wealth, she lives modestly and sees herself as a temporary steward, embodying finance's wisdom without its traps. Finance isn't about markets or retirement plans. It's about understanding risk, creating value, and finding meaning in uncertainty. These aren't cold calculations, but frameworks for living well. Embrace uncertainty, take strategic risks, create enduring value, and remember, the numbers were never the point. They're just another language for being human.